This episode of Morning Brew is brought to you by our friends at Sparks, home of the world's greatest sharpener. Go check out sparkshockey.com. And also Apex Entertainment. Apex in Marlboro has 100,000 square feet of pure fun for all ages. And we are thrilled to welcome Apex Entertainment to the Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor family. Well, just a couple of days ago, if you think about it, the proverbial world or the sky was falling in the Boston Bruins world as a whole litany of bad things happened in no particular order. You get Brad Marchand suspended. You get Bruce Cassidy COVIDed. Just recently, Charlie McAvoy. Non-COVID illness out of the lineup for Saturday night. You lose to the Detroit Red Wings. You have Jake DeBrusk asking for a trade. Holy shit, did you have a lot of badness going?
It feels like it was a month ago too, doesn't it? Maybe it's just the way my week was, but it feels like a month ago.
That feels like a year ago.
Yeah.
The games that you and I had this morning, I know you had this afternoon too, they feel like a month ago.
Oh my God.
Right. As we sit down and welcome you into Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor, which is, and we are all about honesty, more of an afternoon beverage, if not a late afternoon one today, as both Razor and I had some stuff post-game Saturday night, and then Sunday morning was a youth hockey extravaganza, especially for one Andrew Raycroft and family. But the world was falling. The world was falling. That's awful. The sky was falling. Too. The world, the ocean,
everything was falling.
And yet we talked about figure out a way, Razor, just to get through it. And I think that's got to be the lesson again. Doesn't mean everything's great, but you get through it 1-1-1. So you get 3 of 6 points. And while that is not earth-shattering, it's not awful either. You could have gone 0-3. So you find a way to go 1-1-1 after you lose on Saturday night to the Tampa Bay Lightning 3-2 in overtime in a highly entertaining game, especially if you're a Bruins fan, until the end, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But overall, if you look back to that last 5 days from a broadcaster and from a former player perspective, what do you take out of it?
I take out that this team is extremely resilient, and in a season that is going to pose challenges that they haven't seen just this week, getting tested every day. It feels like there's going to be something else throughout this entire season, similar cases, similar issues, that this team is very resilient. And I think the microcosm is Saturday. Of the entire week, their ability to go down 2-0 on a couple of unlucky plays, flat out unlucky, Riley knocking a puck. We'll get to that, but to come back against a really good Tampa team and to continue not get frustrated, to continue to be resilient, to continue to stay with it. This group still has all of those things. They might not have everything that they've had the last 5-6 years, but they still have that. And that goes a long way in this season. And the other big highlight for me is they went 1-1-1. They only got 1 point at home this week, but they outshot their opposition 81-42 in those two home games. Mm-hmm. So that is pretty good too. That is pretty unlucky to only get 1 point out of that kind of an effort on home ice. So resilient week, very resilient week, and commendable for those guys, the whole organization to get through it.
Even though the Bruins vastly outshot Detroit, just to go back to that first game, I got to tell you something. Their interior defense was so much better than Tampa Bay Lightning's. And that to me is, I understand that Tampa is still a fantastic team. I know they're missing Point, and I know they're missing Kucherov, but I don't remember at what point, but they lost Chernak in the game too on Saturday. But the Bruins really attacked after not getting inside at all against Detroit. Holy smokes, did they get to the inside against both Nashville and against Tampa. A team in Tampa that is supposed to be difficult to get to the middle on. They got there. And if it was not for Andre Vasilevsky, the game is very different. Now, of course, he's a big part of the team, and we understand the value of high-octane goaltending. But the Bruins, to me, had no issue. And let's not forget the Bruins are missing two major people too, just like Tampa is. The Bruins showed right now, and all we can grade Razor is right now in front of us, that they could handle them. Could they handle them down the road? I don't know. I don't know if they're deep enough. But right here, right now, they showed that they could skate with them.
No question. And yeah, the Vasilevsky part's, I guess, at this point, a Tampa issue, right? He got them a point, but the reality was the Bruins, like you said, got to the inside. They hit four posts. They did everything they possibly could to produce 62 minutes of really good hockey. And if they play that way, basically the way they played, certainly in Nashville, certainly against Tampa, getting to the middle, we did it in pregame, we did it in postgame, especially the second line, and Holla and Coyle getting to the front of the net and making plays in front of the net, not just standing there and having shots blocked from the point. The pucks were actually getting down to those guys and they were making plays with it. That they do that over a consistent period of time here, they're going to win more than they lose. There's no question.
So is it too early to say that we have found chemistry between Haula and Coyle? We talked much earlier in the season that they had played together in Minnesota. It's been brought up again, the connection that they've played together there, had some success. But is it too early? Not to be Debbie Downer here, but is it too early to say that we have found this chemistry? Or do you feel like that there's something legit there? I'm going to say my opinion is that it is, to use a coffee term, it's percolating. It's brewing. How about that? But I'm not ready to say it's 100% there. I'm just not.
I was not going to jump in. I knew there was one of those something coming. I could tell, and I was going to let it go because I knew it would be a good one. And brewing, percolating. I'm along those lines as well. I'm certainly not mailing it in and cashing it in, I should say. Yeah. The chemistry, but I'm also not going to just poo-poo it and say that it's only luck and it was two games. I think the way Hall has come off of being benched is the same way. I think that's percolating. I think it almost took some stress off of him. It felt like a bit of a weight of a shoulder. And I know we talked about it, but to pose that and to roll with it. Listen, I think they have to roll with it one way or the other, whether it's chemistry the entire year. I think they roll with it at this point. We talked about it. What should the lines look like? I think it's a pointed question. I think
I don't know.
Something that's going to, it is going to be very interesting on Wednesday, what they do. Cause I think they split up the big guys. I think they switch things up in a big way here and maybe try and capture it and get that depth that we've talked about.
They need it. They need it. They have to mix it up. Now the question becomes, how do you go about it? So let's go about it here. Let's talk it out before we get to, I want to break down the goal that was scored by the kid Radish, who made a wicked move. I also want to talk about Lazar's goal that was outstanding and then talk about the overtime goal. We'll touch on the Swayman performance against Nashville too, only because we didn't do a brew after that one. So we got a lot to get to, but let's get to the line combos that as we sit and record this show on Sunday late afternoon, we should have some idea Monday at practice. The team is leaving Monday. They're going out west Monday. So they'll have a skate, and then they'll have a skate Tuesday out in Vancouver as well. But I got a hunch, unless somebody's dinged up, right? That's the other thing. We maybe won't, but we should see more. So let's just assume that your centers, in starting with Bergeron, we know that he's in the middle. The question is going to become now, I mean, I can't imagine that you don't keep Haula on left wing. I don't move him back to center. He hasn't been as effective. So I'll put him on one left wing. I've got to imagine that one center would be, your fourth line center would be Frederick, I guess. He's been better at center. Yep. Okay. So then that leaves, I'm guessing, Tomáš Nosek. We'll call him as a third line center. Whatever the number is okay, whatever.
Yep.
Now the question is, how do you fill in around that? Because if you're going to keep Haula on left wing and you're going to have Coyle, you could Coyle at center. I mean, is that what we're is that what we're still at with Coyle at center? Okay. So now if you're really going to mix it up a little bit, I guess you're keeping 63 with 37 with Marchand coming into the lineup. Yes. Some people last night were talking about moving Marchand off that line.
Yeah. Putting Marchand on. And if that's the case, that it's going to be interesting. And we could probably spend too much time talking about it. But again, I think you try and find a way to keep Haula, Coyle together. You try and I'd like to see Hall and Pastrnak together. So whether you put a Foligno,
so where do you put maybe Taylor Hall then?
Hall, I mean, that's the issue. That's yeah. So I guess you decide whether you want to keep Haula and Coyle together, or you sacrifice Haula down to the third line and go Hall, Coyle, Pastrnak, and go Marchand, Bergeron, Smith.
I think that's what you have to do.
That's more likely what you have to do. And then you put Haula on the left with Nosek and Foligno, third line.
Over Lazar, and then you go
Frederick, Lazar, and Kuhlman. Can you move those guys around? Someone's going to be on the wrong side.
Yeah, but that's why I'm thinking you keep Foligno with Frederick.
Yeah.
With size there. Yeah. And then you either put Kuhlman or Lazar
on the right side with
Nosek.
Yeah.
So the odd man out is now Jake DeBrusk. And is that smart?
No.
Is that right?
So right, that's not smart. I'm answering my stupid. I'm being dumb. It's me that's the dumb one, because no, you have to find a way to keep him in the lineup because he's worth less if he's sitting in the stands.
Right.
And he has played good. He got a good goal in Nashville. I thought he had a really good game against Tampa. Their line was good again. They were moving. They were cooking. So it's good. The line's really interesting. It's a big story. That's the story this week coming up.
Okay. So that's the story this week. Is we'll keep an eye or both eyes on that. Let's go first. We'll go back to Thursday. I want to touch on Swayman's performance against Nashville. Kid was as calm and this year as good as we've seen, the best that he's seen this year. What was the best part about his performance against Nashville when the Bruins won 2-0?
The best part was his ability to track the puck, his patience, his edge work was really good, which allowed him to control rebounds better, keep everything in front of him a little bit more. Nothing was flying off to the sides. The couple times it did, he knew it was going to go that way, so he was able to go and move with it. Mm-hmm. And I touched on it a little bit pregame. I talked to you about it. This is why. This exact week is why Jeremy Swayman couldn't just be given the number one starting job. This is why this week was exactly why he couldn't be handed this, because he didn't play that great against the Rangers, a big marquee matchup game. Mm-hmm. Didn't look comfortable in that Ranger game. Had some rebounds again for two games in a row. Lost two games at home in a row. So he gets 6 days off. Okay. He doesn't have to go in and play the Vancouver game, which they didn't play very well, could have gotten away from him, and then you're on a three-game losing streak. He gets to sit and watch that. Allmark gets the win. Sits and watch Allmark play okay in a 2-1 loss. Didn't really have much. The team didn't score enough. He gets a 2 days with goalie Bob, strictly goalie work, didn't even practice, just goalie work. And then he gets his time in Nashville, and he's sharper because of it. He's mentally sharper. He's physically sharper because he's developing and getting better. So for everyone out there that was saying they should have went with Swayman and Allmark to, or Swayman and Vladar, this is the week why you couldn't have done that. And this proves it why, because he can't, he still needs to develop. He needs to get better.
We talked about this before. Let's again, the Swayman Vladar combo is almost the dreamy situation, because then you say, oh, we're going to have these two goalies for 12 years.
Yeah.
You can't say that, because of the team in front of these guys is different than what Vladar is seeing in Calgary. And he's not playing every game or every other game, even in Calgary. He doesn't have a Markstrom if he stays in Boston to bank things off of, if he's Danny Vladar. So I understand why people want to look at that and say, oh, they shouldn't have done anything. They should have just kept both. Maybe, you know what? Look, maybe they could have gotten a little bit more for Dan Vladar. I know there's people that felt they could have maybe bumped it up to a second round pick. If you want to split hairs, fine, split hairs. They still had to move him and get a veteran to come in. And I'm not picking on Brian Elliott. He's just top of mind. I'm just thinking of him because they saw him. We saw him last night. Longtime vet, 12 or 14 year career now, Razor, something like that in the NHL.
Yeah.
Brian Elliott wouldn't have been the guy.
No. Wouldn't have worked. And it's not a good enough. And to say, and every, you know, Tuca's coming back. Well, listen, look at the panic that happens here right now when they lose a game to Detroit.
Right.
Or a game to the Rangers at home. And oh, they're terrible. They're horrible. Imagine if having to wait till February for Tuca. And things aren't going well. Like, it's crazy. You can't wait till then either. The season's over by the time that happens. So I think that this was a good example for everyone to recognize that the reason Swayman played so well in Nashville is because he had 6 days off and he got to work on his game in those six games. And that is improving his development over time.
And then he was good against Tampa too. Mm-hmm. The one goal, the first goal, the Radish goal, I didn't know. I mean, I know who Radish, you know, Tyler Radish is, but I didn't know that he had that move in his back where, you know, as we talked about Nesson, but also just in general, hockey people know when you make that stick, the move to go inside. So he's a righty coming down the left side. He's driving into Riley, getting leverage underneath, and then puts the stick through the, or the puck through the stick basically area there. Usually you bring it to the forehand. And then you go past or you quickly shoot it. He touched it to himself and went to a backhand short side. And Swayman was diving out of position. I'm not going to say it was a bad goal. I'm going to say it was a misread. Because holy smokes, who knew that Radish had that move in his bag?
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He did it, and you said it on TV. I don't know if Radish did either, or the reality of it. It was the way the play. So he overreads that. He overread the Stamkos overtime play. You see him get sliding away, got a little wide in his stance, which is something they're trying to narrow him up a little bit, get him a little tighter so he's not so reliant. That's what helps kick rebounds out, is that big wide butterfly that he has, that big flexibility. Narrow things up, those rebounds end up finding a way to the corner. So they're working on that. But so there are two plays that he overreads, but for him to grind through that game, he had two goals on nine shots. He's watching Vasilevsky make save after save after save. He came through, made the last 16 saves up until he made 15 saves in a row, I should say, before the Stamkos goal in overtime to get his team into overtime. He had to make a few plays. It was a tough game. Much tougher than the Nashville game. Once you're in a rhythm, you get 42 shots. That's tougher for a goaltender to do it at home. It was a really solid game despite losing and despite not making great plays on the goal. He'll learn from that. And again, it's part of the development. He gets to watch. He gets to see more NHL plays happening. They go in the memory bank.
And now we will see not just what the lines are going to be, but how they go about splitting up the three games in 4 days that will happen coming up this week, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday are the games. Wednesday in Vancouver, Thursday in Edmonton, and then Saturday in Calgary, the big hockey night in Canada, West Coast game, as they like to call it, the second game.
10 o'clock, right? 10 o'clock?
10 o'clock start. Eastern? Yep. Yeah. It's going to be glorious. Yep. Nothing like it. Nothing like it. And then early Sunday morning for those of us who are going to be in the cold rinks. So, yeah, well, look, they're going to split it. One guy's not playing all three. Well, you know, they're going to split it up. So it'll be interesting to see if they go Swayman, Linus, Sway, or if they go Linus, Swayman, and then whoever plays better out of the two maybe gets the start on Saturday night. I could see that. Yeah. All right, let's just take a moment real quick right now, and then we're going to get into a few other things that I want to get through quickly. We've got a ton of stuff to talk about, but just quickly want to tell you about the two companies that have helped make this episode possible, the Sparks Skate Sharpener. Go to sparkshockey.com and check out the finest skate sharpening piece of equipment there is. Earlier this week, Jake felt a nick in his skates, asked me if I could clean it up. It was so easy, so simple. As always, I told him, give me a little time, we'll do it. He's like, I kind of want to do it. And he said, but let me just watch again. He's 11, right? And so we did it together, super quick. The nick came out. All good. Junior Eagles, big weekend, having fun. SparksHockey.com, Razors, where you got to go. Check out the products. Use Morning Brew, get free shipping. But also, they've got great deals on their website right now. Oftentimes, they can ship out same day that you order. SparksHockey.com for the finest piece of skate sharpening equipment you can find.
Santa needs to grab it for any hockey family. If you got two or three people playing hockey, it's Santa's needs to have this under the tree for you.
It's fantastic.
I love it.
All right. The other company we're thrilled to welcome in is Apex Entertainment in Marlboro. This is a place where if you haven't been out there, and especially if you're a kid, but you don't have to be a kid, there's so much fun to do. It's 100,000 square feet of pure fun for all ages. And as they like to say there, perfect weather is always guaranteed at Apex. You can have birthday parties, corporate outings, special events. They've got bowling lanes, multi-lever indoor go-kart track, laser tags, bumper cars, rope courts, arcade, more. They got food, they got beverage. And lastly, they also want to have a live event with Morning Brew at Jaffe and Razor there. We've got to find a night that the Bees are on national TV. Both Razor and I are in town, and we can get the Morning Brew crew together, Razor. Go check out Apex in Marlboro. The kids love it. Love it. Oh, it's a great place for an hour or two.
And I love the go-karts. They rip the two levels. It's awesome. So I'm booking when we get up there, I'm booking a go-kart rip. But I did a corporate gig. My kids love it up there. They were excited when I told them, they were jumping on board. So thanks for the support. But it's an awesome place. So much fun.
It is. Go check out Apex Entertainment in Marlboro. All right, let's get through a few more players that I think were very important to the Bruins in the last couple of games. I think they've had, I hope that their watershed moments, so to speak, to kickstart them going. First one, Brandon Carlo. Finally, we've seen two games where we're like, okay, there. Such a young kid, but very mature and has had a lot of NHL experience. He's been, 4 or 5 years in the league now. They need him to be this way. Against Nashville, you said it in pregame last night, best game he's had of the season by far. Need to do it. You put it on Twitter. You put it there as well. If Carlo can get consistently at that level, this will make a significant difference for this team, especially in their own zone.
No question. And then you're piggybacking McAvoy and Carlo together basically 50 minutes a night, almost 45 to 50 minutes. That's one of those two guys is on the ice. And if Carlo's at that level that we have seen him play and he's played the last two games, it changes everything. It makes all their partners better. It makes all the D better. So very, very important. I think we've seen that. I think that's a big reason why they played so well the last two games. And why the D played so well was because Carlo was anchoring it the way he did. So good on him being physical, being long, being strong, moving the puck quickly and decisively.
So, yeah, and he was very decisive with the shot that he scored on in Nashville And I don't know if we see that enough out of him. I see a push of puck to the net instead of the hammer to the net. And I thought that when he took the puck in a few strides against Nashville, his head was up and he was shooting to score, not to just put it on net. And I know that we talk about wanting to create rebounds by getting pucks through, but there's a difference to that and just slapping the puck from the point and to where a goaltender catches it and it's like a muffin and it's like, okay, end of play. Let's reset. And sometimes I think Carlo just puts the puck on net from tougher angles or at the wrong time, instead of holding it or rimming it around to the other side or whatever. And I just feel like there's been he had three shots against Tampa. It was a little more decisive or determined in that. It's a mindset. I know it's not his number one thing, but it's got to be more regular part of his game.
Yeah, and to your point, those muffins that go into the goalie's chest are the same as shooting it over the glass or shooting it into one of their players' pads. It's the exact same deflating shift, momentum shift, and that can change a whole period. You know, that we've seen it happen where it just goes down the other way, or the faceoff happens, they win it, they go down the other way, and then you're chasing the game the next 3 minutes. And so yeah, to your point, those plays, it's almost like he doesn't want to hurt anyone in front of the net sometimes with a hard shot.
Right.
And exactly. It's just hammer time. Let it fly.
Get it through. Work on the control then, man. Get it through. He's such a pro. Get it. Don't hesitate. I want to see him unleash it. Unleash the fury of the heavy bomb more often. Speaking of unleashing, David Pastrnak had 8 missed shots. He only had 1 shot on goal against Tampa, 3 that were blocked, attempted block, 8 that missed. Now, a few of those were posts. That's how they count. I've liked his mindset lately. I have. And I've liked Taylor Hall's mindset. So you have 2 guys on the wings, which we've been calling for, driving lines a bit more lately. I feel like, again, like Carlo, something we've been hoping for, something we definitely desperately need to continue to see, though, for this team to have success.
No question, and it's a depth issue, and you've touched on that. It's that depth issue, and that they need to get the depth from the wings. That's mm-hmm. where it needs to come from. That's what they did over the summer. That's where they had made additions, is those wings to be able to drive lines at times. And when we say that, I think it's a good example of Hall and Pastrnak with Bergeron in the middle. Patrice didn't have to do too much the last couple of games. I know he was physical with Forsberg, but offensively, he was just reading off those guys. He was getting to the front of the net a little bit.
Yep.
He's not the one taking the puck 200 feet. He's letting those guys do it. He's following in behind. And that's how wingers drive lines.
And that's what these wingers, like I said, need to do more. I think that Hall at times can get a little predictable with what he is going to do, taking it wide, going behind the net. It becomes, you can flush him to the outside. You can then, if you can't seal him because he is powerful and strong, you can hand him off to your other defenseman. You know what I mean? Be a little less predictable. Yeah. And I felt like we saw that the last 2 games, which I think is helpful. Again, getting back to driving the line. Speaking of Bergeron, what were his numbers through? It was 17 of 18 in the faceoff circle through 2 periods against Tampa, and then 21 of 26 overall. Just amazing. And I know there's still people that kind of, well, faceoffs aren't that important. I get it. I don't get it, though. Actually, I don't get it. Faceoffs are incredibly important, especially for a team that, wants the puck on their stick and has set faceoff plays. Do you think something happens? Probably an unfair question, given we don't even know if these 2 guys will be in the lineup come January 15th. Do you think Patrice Bergeron would look to go with Philip Forsberg? Do you think he would after that?
I don't think so. I think Patrice, I mean, he's past that. I don't think he's going to go look to fight anybody in any way. He's going to go at him, and he's going to try and cork him. I would count on that. We've seen Patrice, how strong he is on his skates and how hard he can hit. And he's done it since he's 18. I, him unloading on guys when he was 18 was incredible to me. I couldn't believe this kid could do that. He's just so strong on his skate. So I would not put it past him to catch Forsberg with his head down at some point, but the fighting, no.
Do you think anybody tries to go at Philip Forsberg to you know, by the way,
Forsberg's not going to fight. So no, I don't. I think it'll be guys going at Forsberg and someone else is going to have to jump in and then they go, you know, someone else gets involved. Forsberg's similar. He's not, you know, he's a skill guy. He's a first line guy. He's going to look at Frederick and say, why would I fight you? What a waste of time that is.
Right. Nashville didn't have fighters in their lineup this past game, by the way, between these two teams, but they do have some guys if they want that are willing to fight. I was looking up something, the whole fighting thing, just out of curiosity. I fully admit this. No idea. This stunned me. I'm not quizzing you. I'm just trying to, but do you have any idea who's leading the NHL in fights right now? Would you have any idea who to guess?
I have absolutely no idea. And I was going to say, have the Bruins even had a fight? Like
Well, yeah, Freddie's had, he fought the Middleton kid against San Jose. And Uncle Nick fought in, who did he fight in? I can't remember right now. I'll remember in a second. I'll bring it up. But yeah,
but it was just Foligno those two. Or maybe Forber. No, Forber hasn't, right?
No,
so Forber anyways, hasn't. To your question, the only guy I'm thinking of like a Brady Tkachuk or the fight recently was Lemieux. You know, maybe that guy in LA, he might be up there.
He bit.
He's bite. That's why that's in my head, those two guys. But
there's a kid by the name of Liam O'Brien.
Oh, good Irishman.
Plays for Arizona. He leads the NHL, I believe, with 6 fights this year. I never would have known that.
Too. Yeah. I'm not even bothering watching Arizona play.
Trust me, I'm not either.
There's a couple heavies, right? There's a couple heavies out west. There's a kid in Colorado who's a big kid who's fought a couple times. I think San Jose has a big kid, but
we have Middleton. Middleton's fought 5 times.
Yeah, Middleton.
Tanner, the kid who hit Zaboral, Jeannot, has had 3 scraps this year. He is an absolute bull. That kid, Tanner Jeannot. He's not a dirty player. He, by the way, you know who he learned from, Tanner Jeannot? He learned a lot from Jeff Odgers, who is just one of the greatest guys. But you know what he learned from Jeff Odgers? He learned about being the most physically fit person you can be. Jeff Odgers is literally farm guy strength. He is. He's farm boy strength. He'd lift pails of everything all day long.
All summer.
And as tough as could be, and Bruins fans have got to remember Jeff Odgers, and his nose went 8 different directions. I got to know Odgy with the Atlanta Thrashers organization. And if you want to talk about a guy who, as he would say every year, I'd say, hey, Odgy, how you doing? Fooled him again. I'm back in the league. You know what I mean? Like he'd be like, he worked his ass off so much. And that's where, and Tanner Jeannot, Saskatchewan, can learn from him. He's not a dirty player. He crushed Zaboral cleanly, though. I feel awful for Zaboral. No update.
Yeah, it's a big loss.
I think it's going to be a while, Razor. I think it's going to be.
Between it didn't look like a bone bruise when he was getting pulled off the ice.
No. All right, enough with the tangent. A couple of other things. The performances, plural, of Jack Eichon and Connor Clifton. A very nice visual in the game against Tampa. I had major concerns, fully admit, going in, especially for Eichon, just given that he hadn't been able to skate much. I don't even know if he could skate at all because of the lockdown, shutdown that Providence had. And here he comes out and plays, 15 minutes or so? 15:31. Had 6 total attempts, 2 hit the net. I thought he had a very clean game. I thought Connor Clifton had a clean game. He played over 20 minutes, 22-26, and 5 hits. Eichon found himself on the offside regularly, too. Not an easy task.
He did a great job. I think right away in that first period, he goes up against Perry one-on-one. Perry's trying to drive the net. And we know Corey Perry is a big dude, long dude. And Eichon used his low center of gravity, got underneath him, pushed him wide, and had no problem with that. He has a good stick along the wall. He looked more, you know, composed. He looked happy to make a nice outlet pass. He was ripping it. He wasn't hesitating. It wasn't a little soft pass just to make sure it was nice and crisp on the tape. And to get that kind of performance out of both of those guys was really, really surprising. Flat out surprising to see Clifton play over 22 minutes and not notice him out there, which is an absolute compliment for him to play the way he does, the way we want him to on a consistent basis, nice and quiet. That was a big deal for both those guys because, listen, Clifton watching Zboril for 7 games had to have been thinking, I don't know when I'm going to get a chance to get in there again. And for Sean, you know, being in the minors, that it feels like you're 100 miles away. So getting a good opportunity, getting some looks, putting some plays on tape goes a long way for both of those guys.
And we talked about this post-game too. Let's not forget, this point could be huge. We don't know. But to have those two guys in the lineup and to more or less control the game, but to not have gotten 1 point would have been devastating. To get that 1 point was important. So those two guys get in. One of them's going to be playing on Wednesday night. One of those two guys. Which one? Don't know. I think they assigned Ashant, I think, back to Providence along with Steen on Sunday midday.
Save some
cap money.
But
that's probably just save some cap money. Right. Yeah. That's what it is. But, you know, assuming, and let's hope that Charlie McAvoy is just an illness that he can get over. We haven't heard anything more than
tomorrow's a big illness. Monday will be an interesting day over there. There's a lot of
big news day. Big news day. What's going to happen? All right. Let's finish up with this. What happens now? We started kind of with what do we do with Jake DeBrusque? What do we do with Jake DeBrusque? Let's finish with that because you're heading out west. He's from Edmonton. We know that there's teams out west that are interested in him. I got to imagine that Vancouver would be. I got to imagine that maybe Calgary or Edmonton would be. You know, people and us, we've talked about, I mean, I still would love a nice defenseman. I know there's a lot of talk about some centermen. What about a guy like Sean Monahan? I know I'm speculating here, and I know that's a stupid thing to do because you're just throwing darts at the board. But he hasn't been great this year out there numbers-wise, yet he's playing third-line center. Could this be a, hey, we'll have to maybe add a little bit more to get Sean out of there? Is that a type of player that would interest you in a return, hypothetically speaking?
Yes, he's, and I know he's struggled a little bit. He hasn't maybe lived up, similar to Jake. You know, he's a young Canadian kid, first round pick, high hopes, maybe hasn't completely fulfilled them, but he's skilled. He can play up the middle. He can do a lot of different things. And, you know, he's different than the other centermen the Bruins have right now. You know, he's not a coil. He's not a Nosek. He brings a little bit more speed, a little bit more skill. You know, whether he's responsible enough for this Bruins organization, you know, we talked about that camera, you and I, just how hard it is to be a center on this team and the standard that Bergeron set for centers in this organization and how much they have to do. Not all can do that, but I would certainly entertain that. I think getting a guy like that in the lineup brings a lot of skill. So yeah, it would be interesting. The timing of it will be interesting. And does Jake have to bring another bag of clothes to go up there? Or are they going to be patient? Because again, we know like that the organization's known Jake hasn't been happy for much longer than just coming out on Monday. Mm-hmm. So do you think what's your sense? Do you think they'll hold on to the perfect hockey deal, or do you think there is a little bit more urgency now to make a move to just rip the band-aid off, so to speak?
I think that there has to be a sense of making a move because let's not forget you've got, I think it's 14 days, 15 days or so until the Christmas freeze for 6 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
Forgive me if I'm wrong, folks. I might be off by 5-6 days, you know. But
yeah, it's a long way now.
It's like a week, right? Or 6 days where there's no move. So how much longer do you wait? Now, you know, if he starts ripping it up, you say, oh, shit, we got to keep him. On the other hand, somebody might say, fine, done. Deal's done. Let's go. I think you got to do it sooner rather than later. Again, I'm not against. If you're moving him just for a pick and you're opening up cap space, you got to do something with that cap space if it's significant. $3.5 to $4 million is significant. Mm-hmm. If you're moving him for another player, my gut tells me it's a bigger deal. You make a package deal and you try and upgrade either a top four D, not easy, or a top three center. You're not going to get number one. Could you get a guy who could slide up and down between two, three? Yeah. Again, that's kind of why I bring up a name like Sean Monahan. We will have to wait and see. But look, the Bruins also, and teams have done this before. Haven't the Bruins made some significant deals when they've been on road trips too? So I think they are.
No, it's kind of a thing. Yes. A
tradition.
A bit of a thing. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
So we'll have to wait and see on that. All right, that's going to wrap up this morning brew with Jaffe and Razor. The Bruins head out of town on Monday to get in Monday night, have all day Tuesday to acclimate to the Pacific time zone. Vancouver, if you're wondering, is going to be not balmy, but it's going to be like here, maybe a little bit warmer. Then they're going to head to some much colder temps in Edmonton, which, by the way, I think today is at 3 degrees, but it will be warmer than that. Miserable. And then Calgary by Saturday, I think, will be in the 30s, so it won't be too bad. But pack up your parkas, buddies. Get out there. Let's hope, fingers crossed, that COVID does not impact the Bruins more. But don't be surprised if it doesn't rear its ugly, vicious head, so to speak. Let's just see what happens there. And let's again hope that Charlie McAvoy comes back. And we know that Brad Marchand will be ready to go. Understatement. Great job, Razor. Great to see you. Everybody, have a wonderful day. That'll wrap up Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor. Again, thank you to Spark Skate Sharpeners and to Apex Entertainment. Everybody, have a wonderful day. Razor and I are going to be back with you either late Thursday night or earlier, sometime on Friday, so December 9th after the Edmonton game, or the next day, the 10th, we will record something. Everybody have a wonderful couple of days, and as always, please enjoy those multiple coffees.